I'm Chris Stuchko, co-host of the Ninth Grade Experience podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the EduGals podcast. We are your co-hosts, Rachel Johnson
and Katie Atwell. We are here to bring you tips and tricks to help you integrate technology into your classroom.
In this episode, we are talking all about different strategies that we can use in our classrooms to make our courses accessible to various different language levels.
Yeah, we'll share some different ideas that we have and how you can best support these students.
Let's get started. This week, Katie and I are chatting all about different strategies to make our courses accessible to various language levels. So this is Katie's wheelhouse. So we're going to defer to her judgment and her strategies in this episode.
Yes, they are definitely my, that's kind of my thing. It's what I do. I teach English language learners. But at the same time, you're a content teacher, so you can tell me how crazy my ideas and strategies are or how unrealistic they are. And together we will make it work.
I'm actually really excited because last episode we kind of focused all on like my struggles and my thinking around mastery-based grading and learning and those sort of approaches. So it's kind of cool that we're kind of turning things around this time and focusing on your wheelhouse so I get to do the learning.
Yeah, it's fun. I like it. So Ontario, we've seen, you know, an influx of refugee students and newcomers in general. And so seeing as we're about to start a new school year, we figured we'd share some different strategies and ideas as to like simple things you can do, things that we should keep in mind as educators as we're teaching a range of students in our classroom. Because at the end of the day, what works for English language learners, it really does help to support all of the learners in our classrooms. And so while we say it's for various language levels, keep in mind that any accommodations or any sort of things you do to adjust and make your content accessible is going to help every single student in that classroom.
Yeah, that's so true. It's coming from that perspective of a universal design for learning, right? Like being able to accommodate all of your students, providing those scaffolds for any student who might need it. Designing with your English language learners in mind, but knowing that it can benefit all of your students in your classroom.
And so I think one of the things that I always say is one of my top strategies is the use of images in as much as possible. And it seems silly, but you'd be amazed at how complex languages and how different our lived experiences are. And so by including some images, it helps students to make connections with what they know from their lived experience to what you're actually asking them. So even if it's something simple as, I don't know, a building or a skyscraper, like there's lots of different words that we use in English that maybe don't translate easily or that they've never actually experienced. So even if it seems unimportant to the question itself or the content that you're teaching, try to include these images so that they can see what these words are and they don't have to rely on a translator constantly, because it's harder to make those long-term vocabulary acquisition. It's harder to make that occur if we're just relying on translators the whole time.
It's super cliche, but a picture really is worth a thousand words.
Right? And then they have that, right? And then they'll be like, oh, skyscraper. And then they can think about it and you can have a conversation about the word even. And I know we don't always have time to do that. But a building that scrapes the sky, you know what I mean? Like even looking at, I don't know. Anyhow, so pictures. Pictures are amazing and they really do help build meaningful connections and vocabulary for English language learners.
There's a ton of research behind it too, right? Like all the dual coding and visualization and all of those sort of theories that go into it. You know, having those pictures with the words does help to put it into a couple of different places in our brains. So yeah, pictures are so, so helpful. And, you know, as a science teacher, I can really appreciate that, right? Because a lot of the words we talk about, they are very, very, very academic and context specific. Like, they're words that you don't always come across in everyday language. I mean, I'm sure that's the same for any content area, right? Like, there's always those academically specific kinds of words. But I think what's kind of more difficult and hard for students to make those connections in science is a lot of the words we use are things like you can't even see in everyday life. And so having those model representations to go along with the words can help to build that conceptual understanding as well.
And so that's one kind of strategy, is the use of those images. The next, I would... You know, we could do vocabulary as a whole. So it's important to consider the type of words we're teaching and the type of words that students need to understand. So in the ESL world, we talk about, you know, basic interpersonal communication skills and the words that are required for those, you know, social conversations. And then we talk about more academic language proficiency. And even within academic, we have content specific. We have words like construct, define, evaluate, like all of these assessment terms that we use on tests and evaluations, or problems, right? Like word problems. And what you need to do is you need to think about, you know, how can I get my students to understand these very complex words? Are there ways that I can simplify that? How am I explicitly teaching or making connections for these students so that they know what I'm asking for when I use these words?
So then what's your advice around vocabulary lists? Because we have sort of been having this conversation for our DStream Science course, and one of our team members suggested, hey, like, why don't we develop vocabulary lists at the beginning of our units, and we can have them linked into our pacing trackers so that any student can have access to them. So I guess what I'm asking is, how do you decide what words go onto those vocabulary lists? Like, that's kind of one part. And then how much do you scaffold that? Like, what's sort of best practice in terms of building those?
And that's an excellent question, because as you were saying that, I was like, well, one word that maybe my ESL level E student may know, my A student wouldn't know. And so where do you draw the line? And so it's important if you are creating vocabulary for content specific terminology that is important, that's great. But don't assume that is all that's needed. So I would keep it open so that the class, and I would do it as a whole class, because odds are if one person doesn't know a word, there are some that are unsure or uncertain. And so lists are great. I would say make sure you can insert images into those lists. Make sure you leave room for translations, English definitions, and then allow some interaction with some of the terminology. So having a list is one thing. But if we're not interacting with the vocabulary, if we're not using it in our spoken language, if we're not reading it and writing it and having more output with this term, with these terms, the list isn't going to do anything.
Okay, so that does kind of go along with some of our thinking. You did add a couple things in there, so now I'm going to go back and tweak our vocab list to make sure like we're adding in all those components. But our sort of thinking was starting and kind of going through and pulling out some of those content-specific words and having them there, leaving space for the translations and the definitions and all of that sort of thing. So we could collaborate on it together as a class, or students can then take the template and customize it to what their needs are. But then also being able to add to that list, like we're going to leave a bunch of empty spaces down at the bottom so that we can continue to add that vocabulary as we go.
Yeah. And part of it, you'd be surprised the number of conversations that start if you leave room for the whole class to put in their own language. And so seeing some of the similarities and differences between languages, it's a great conversation starter. It's a great way to, you know, make people feel recognized for who they are and the language they bring to your classroom. So, I mean, keep it as a class resource. I would say, like, don't give them a copy each, but keep it as something that you build as a class community.
I love that because, as you said, like, you're building that cultural awareness piece as you're building your vocabulary lists as well.
And then even if they're not in an ESL program but speak another language, you're actually making more peer connections with some of your students that share languages, which is much needed because that's one of the things we're lacking in our school right now is our English language learners feel so isolated and segregated, and they have a hard time making those peer connections with others. And there's a lot of students who speak the same languages, but they're just more proficient in English. And so even something as simple as this class vocabulary list, it ends up being something where they start to make connections and relationships with others, which will only strengthen your school community and also the language proficiency for your English language learners because they're taking more risks.
So one more question, what tech tools would you suggest doing this in?
So you could do it in Sheets. You could do it in, like, I like Google Read and Write for finding images and simple definitions and translations. So for those who are new to that tool, it's a text help tool and it's a Chrome extension. So you can find it in the Chrome Web Store. And what it does is it's used on websites. It can be used in docs, slides, etc. And it just helps students to be able to have things read aloud to them. And then there's different tools such as the translation, the dictionary, picture dictionary, talking. So you speak and it will type for you. It's a really great tool for a lot of our learners, if not all, to be honest.
So then do you have them copy those translations and the pictures and put them into the document or whatever you're working on as
yep.
that building? Okay.
Yep. And then sometimes there aren't like relevant images that make sense to students. And so I say, well, let's go to Google and see if we can find something that will help you make that connection better. So it's a good starting place and then kind of go from there.
Yeah, I think any of like the Google Workspace applications are probably really, really good here in terms of building these vocabulary banks, or I don't know if it's a list really, right? It's a bank of resources. And I started out originally sticking this into a Google Doc. You know, docs sort of make a lot of sense, right? Because that's where words end up going and where you do the majority of your writing.
Yep.
But now I'm kind of picturing with you saying like include images and visuals and that is maybe building it as a slide deck instead in Google Slides. And then each slide is like a Frayer model. And so you could have the words and the definition and an image and an example.
Yeah, and non-examples, which is kind of neat. So what we'll do is in the show notes, we'll put in, you know, an image or an example of a Frayer model so that others can see it. But if you do a quick Google search, that's an awesome vocab tool for all students. Because if they can define it and give examples and what it isn't, that's really showing the knowledge and that expertise around that term to get them more comfortable with using it.
I've actually also seen another model. So I came across this in a different course that I did recently, and it is very Frayer-like in terms of the way you lay it out, but it's called the SEEIT model. And so it's S-E-E-I. So you state, you write down like the definition for the word, you exemplify, so you provide examples, and then you elaborate. So that's the other E, you write the definition in your own words. And maybe you could then take that and have the translation to go along with that piece. And then illustrating, so drawing the example and creating a metaphor for the concept. So that one's a little bit of a different flavor of something like a Frayer model that could be kind of interesting as well.
Another thing to consider, and I worked on a project for this and then COVID hit and then we didn't end up kind of implementing. But one thing I created was like an evaluation placemat. And so what it did was it has all of the common terms that we use in evaluations. It has an image for each. And then it has the term in their first language and English. And then on the back side, it just has the English with the idea of let's start by having it dual language. And then as they're ready and as they're developing kind of that vocabulary mastery and comfort level, you flip it around and you just have the English with the image just to help students kind of problem solve some of the complex language that we use in education during evaluation times when we feel so kind of stressed out. So you use this during class time, etc., but then you also use it during evaluations for that, I don't know, like that reassurance.
I really like that. And so you would have a bank of these, I would assume, for different languages, depending on what languages you needed access to for this resource.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that being super, super useful. And again, not just for our English language learners, for all of our students, like why not take that English only side, blow it up into a really big poster and put it on the wall in your classroom somewhere as then acting like an anchor chart, right? And there's a lot of talk about using anchor charts in elementary, but we rarely hear about them in secondary. But something like this would be so useful for our students.
No, definitely. And then seeing that and feeling like, okay, I can do this because I get it. You know, we've had the conversation, we've been using this. We refer to it when we're looking at some of our word problems or talking about language we use in the classroom. And then it kind of takes away that fear around that language. And that's building long-term skills that they can then use in all of their courses.
I could actually see that as being even a beginning of the semester kind of group activity that you could do where you could include the student voice in there and have them help you build one.
Definitely. One thing that I also want to kind of put on, you know, educators' radar is asking questions. So at the end of a class, don't simply ask, do you have any questions? Because depending on the language level, like maybe that's, can I go to the bathroom? Can I go get a drink? Those are questions. So you need to make sure that when you are asking questions, you're really breaking that down into more specific. So today we learned about whatever the concept is. What do you remember? What do you know? You know, kind of break that down a bit. So yes, it's going to take a bit more time, but there are many students who have no idea what you want from them when you ask, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I've even heard some general advice around asking that, do you have any questions question? Because just saying, do you have any questions, doesn't really invite questions per se. Like a lot of students just will ignore that. I've always flipped around my language and instead of saying, do you have any questions? I say, what questions do you have for me? And like flipping the language that way just invites more questions. Like it's, I guess, not as daunting, but I do love the advice of like breaking it down even further.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've talked about this concept in science. What questions do you have about this concept?
Or do you understand this concept? Or how can I help you better understand? You know what, or what do you not understand about whatever? Just kind of changing that language a bit to make sure that they understand that you are checking that they know and that they feel confident versus a very general, do you have questions? It's not an inviting question.
I feel like this, though, is where doing things like mastery checks or even just exit tickets or things like that would really help to build that understanding of where your students are at and how much they are understanding. Because I would think, you know, some of our language learners are maybe more comfortable writing than they are speaking. So if you're asking those oral questions, they might not know how to phrase it, but they could write it down. And maybe you do a mixture of both. I think that would probably be best practice.
I was about to say that transitions well into this idea of how we are having them demonstrate their work. We have to remember that if they are earlier on in their language journey, they don't have the complex writing skills that we often make assumptions or we assume they have based on the fact that they're in my grade 9 or grade 10 course, whatever the case may be. But you know, you also then have to question, where in my curriculum does it state that they have to write an essay to demonstrate their learning? why have we chosen the essay? Why do they have to write a 2-page reflection? If I have somebody who's just learning English and has no skills, how are you going to make that more accessible to them? How are you going to make it so that they can demonstrate what they know in a different format? And oftentimes that's going to be pictures. So maybe what they do is they do slides and they show a picture and then they explain the picture to you. And so they could explain what they've learned about that concept in a different way. But we need to make sure that we're offering options and not sticking with the single essay or reflection or, you know, whatever the case may be. Like, we need to have more options for our students.
I think that that also then kind of goes along with making use of first language, especially for those students who are at very early stages of learning English. And I've seen this in teachers, and I've even heard it, right? It's like, oh no, we speak English here. You know, we don't speak our first languages. Like, you have to practice your English. But they're already coming to our classrooms with these assets. They could have really good understanding in their first language, so use it.
Yeah, and it seems crazy, but I even let them use it in my English class where they're learning, because they understand things. They understand. It's not that they're not intelligent people. It's just that they don't yet have the language skills to be able to demonstrate and share what they know with you yet. And so we have to be careful that we're not, you know, closing pathways and we're not preventing them from demonstrating the knowledge that they have by just saying English only. So have their words on the wall, you know, have languages around the classroom, show that it's a safe space, allow conversations in first languages. You can tell when they're on topic. You can. And if you're having them like write or draw or do something while they're working and they're speaking their first language, you'll be able to tell who's on task because look, they're completing the work. Yes, it might not be in a language that you understand, but that's okay.
Yeah, it really gets down to that question, right? Of when you're doing your assessments, like, what are you actually assessing? Are you assessing their understanding or are you assessing their ability to communicate in English? And that's a big difference.
That's a huge difference, because that's not telling you how much they know about science or how much they know about history, because they could be very passionate about those topics and know so much. So let them demonstrate in a language that works for them. And then if you as a teacher need to use like a Google Translate app or something like that to check, yes, it's an extra step, but it's not that bad. The technology has become pretty great, to be honest with you. And you'll be able to see what they know and understand about your course.
All right, Katie, what other strategies have you got for us?
Well, part of me wants to say mastery-based. Modern Classroom Project is a great strategy. But, you know, sentence starters and all of those different scaffolds, word banks. And you need to make sure that if you're providing word banks, they're words that you've explicitly taught or ensured that they understand. So, like, there's so many things that kind of you're going to use on evaluations and assessment and activities, but you still need to make sure you're actually teaching them to make them meaningful. So a word bank on its own without having taught those words to students, that's not going to do anything. So ensure that we're doing explicit teaching and then adding these scaffolds into assessments and evaluations so that they can actually be successful. And well, for science, like, let's talk about that lab report, right? Like, you can scaffold that out so well. Like, you can do exemplars. You can do one as a class. Like, I love to model the actual format of writing with my class. And so I'll do it myself. I'll show them how it's done. And then we do one as a whole group. And it starts this conversation of, what do you guys think? Does that sound right? What doesn't sound right about that? How can we fix it? And then it gets them thinking about the writing. And then I have them do it in groups and then on their own. So yes, it's a lot of steps, but it doesn't have to be for a whole lab report, for example. Like, maybe you want to target, you know, one section and you're going to do it that way. But yeah, so starting with, you know, really explicitly teaching the formats you want them to be able to demonstrate their learning and use throughout the semester, and using those sentence starters, because there's nothing wrong with that. you know, fill in the blanks for the first lab report for some of these learners, it's not going to be a bad thing.
Yeah. And you can, as the semester progresses, you can pull back the scaffolds as you go. And that's exactly what we're thinking and kind of planning for as we're building our grade 9 course for next year, is we want to build those skills with lab reports and other things as well. But instead of changing our scales, like our mastery-based scales, we're going to change the scaffolding. So we're going to start very scaffolded, and we're going to pull that back kind of as we go through a semester. And that's good for all kids.
And that's good for language learners, right? So that's exactly what we need to do. So like I said at the beginning, like any strategies or any things that we suggest to actually support language learners really will help all students in your classroom. And your course will still be rigorous if that's what you want. And you're still going to have students demonstrating meaningful learning and curriculum expectations. We're just allowing them to build and actually build that foundation that's going to help them through the rest of their high school years.
We did talk about it a little bit at the beginning, but graphic organizers could also be really helpful.
Definitely. And one thing that I, especially for research or for reading comprehension, brainstorming, etc., you know, one of the things that I've been doing in recent years is teaching them different note-taking methods, because note-taking is challenging. Like, how do you put things in your own words if you're developing those words? So I've taken a lot of time to teach them, you know, mind maps and Cornell notes and dot jots and all of these different kind of methods to help them learn how not to plagiarize, essentially. So it's important to recognize that plagiarism is so easy for language learners because they don't have their own language to be able to change the words and to summarize what they've learned. And so we need to support them by helping them to build those skills, those summarizing skills, those understanding skills. And it's not going to be overnight. And so if you notice somebody is plagiarizing in your class, you know, have that conversation. Say, okay, so what did you find difficult? Why? You know, what does this mean? And see if they can do that transfer and be able to put it in their own words. Because if not, you now know what the issue is. They don't have the language to be able to summarize. And so that's something that we need to work on and actually explicitly teach. And it takes a long time, but it works.
Yeah, for sure. I have heard of plenty of teachers complaining about plagiarism, and quite a few of those cases do stem from the fact that it's just a lack of having that language to be able to summarize, as you said. So yeah, I definitely agree with you there.
And you know, for a lot of my students in their country, it's okay to copy the words of somebody else because they see it as you're respecting the person that wrote that versus plagiarism. So it's a very different mentality, because if you reword something into your own words, it's like you're stealing their ideas. So it's almost like the opposite mentality in education, in how they're learning. And so just, you know, be aware that you have to tell them, no, we don't copy word for word unless we're going to use quotation marks, and you might have to teach that and actually that reference properly citing them. But there are some cultural considerations to keep in mind in all of our courses, research, etc. Like, school is different around the world.
That's expanding our critical consciousness.
Look at you bringing in the buzzwords. I like it.
I know. All the buzzwords. We might need a vocabulary list for this episode.
No kidding. And I think one last thought that I think is worth sharing is to know that students come from a lot of different lived experiences. Trauma exists. They could still be living trauma in their own lives. And just looking at the whole student, making those relationships with students, we don't need to know what happened in their past, but we need to kind of walk into our classroom with that awareness of our students are living different lives than we are. They've come from different places around the world. They're here for different reasons. And we don't know what goes on when they walk out of this building at the end of the day. So try to approach all students particularly English language learners, because we know they're coming from other areas of the world, et cetera, and there's lots going on out there. But all learners, we really need to have this awareness that we do not know what their lives look like. And we need to make sure we're creating a safe environment that doesn't trigger or cause more harm.
I think that's a really great place to wrap up our conversation. I don't know if I can top what Katie just said. So let's wrap it up here. And what we'll do is we'll include any of the links and resources we talked about here today in our show notes. And you can access our show notes for this episode at edugals.com/96. That's edugals.com/96.
And if you like what you heard, then please feel free to share it with a friend or a colleague. And don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so that you don't miss out on any future content.
And as always, we would love to hear from you. So you can go on to our Flip. It's called Flip Now. Did you know that?
I didn't.
But yes, you can go onto our Flip, otherwise known as Flipgrid, and you can leave us a video message there. So that's edugals.com/Flipgrid. I haven't changed it yet. Or you can go onto our website at edugals.com and leave us a written response there.
Thanks for listening, and see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening to this episode of our EduGals podcast. Show notes for this episode are available at edugals.com. That's edugals.com. We'd also love to hear your feedback, so leave us a message on our website.
And if you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe and consider leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, keep being awesome and try something new.